Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome to the Politics Guys with your hosts, Jay Parson and Michael Baranowski.
Welcome to the Politics Guys. I'm Michael Baranowski, a political scientist at Northern Kentucky University. My co-host this week, as always, is Cleveland area attorney and sometime Republican strategist Jay Carson. My normal co-host, Jay, couldn't be on the show this week. He's experiencing some severe technical difficulties, but don't worry, I am not going to do this on my own. I am joined for this week's Ask the Politics Guys by my friend and Cincinnati area attorney, Dominique Wagner. Dominique, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
You know, the NFL season started just a few weeks ago, and considering that American football is the national pastime of the United States, I think it probably displaced baseball sometime in the 1970s, I thought it would be good for us to do a special Ask the Politics Guys about some issues related to the NFL. And so for a couple questions here. The first one, here we go, is what business does Congress have investigating concussions in the NFL in the first place? I mean, all the players are adults, and it's a private entity, the NFL is, so what could Congress do even if they wanted to do anything about concussions? What do you think, Dominique?
Well, I think that the NFL has, and most professional sports actually have relationships with Congress, and, they receive a lot of different benefits, whether it's tax-exempt statuses, whether it's tax money to help, build stadiums, to help. They get a lot of financial resources. And so I think that Congress has the right to know exactly what it is that they're funding through antitrust exemptions, through tax-exempt statuses, and like you said, this is a national pastime. This is something that is a big part of our culture, and I think Congress has the right to be looking into what is happening to players so that, there's a bit of transparency in what they are funding.
Right. And my first thought on reading this question is, well, Congress can investigate pretty much anything it wants thanks to the Commerce Clause, which is a very handy sort of thing. Anything that involves interstate commerce, and the NFL certainly does, they have a purview over that. Also, I should point out that antitrust exemption for the NFL, that is a big deal. And that started back in 1961. There's a thing called the Sports Broadcasting Act of 1961, which that's one of the things that allows those infamous blackout rules, right, which sometimes, sometimes means you don't get to watch the game you want to watch. And so the NFL does a lot of things that if it were just a regular old business would be, and in fact were in the past, considered anti-competitive. But Congress has given them this big exemption. And so now there's nobody who really thinks that exemption is in danger, but at least it gives them some sort of slight leverage, certainly. The NFL can't just blow Congress off, basically, in terms of what can be done, and I think that's the bigger question. That's a question a lot of people have. The first thing that came to my mind was lawsuits, big, fat lawsuits. I think that's, if we're going to see some change, it's going to come through big class action lawsuits, which I should point out that Republicans in Congress are trying desperately hard to minimize as much as possible, and for their own reasons. But like, for instance, there was a class action lawsuit filed recently against Pop Warner Football, which is kind of the lowest level of that's not professional, obviously, little kid football. But you start seeing that sort of thing in there in high schools and colleges, maybe the supply of players kind of dries up. I mean, would you think that lawsuits are probably the way this is going to happen as opposed to legislation?
Oh, I think that lawsuits are definitely the way it's going to happen. And I think, the fact that the NFL, as we dig deeper and deeper, I think it's already come to light that the NFL had a lot more information on brain injury and concussions and what that leads to than they ever disclosed to players. And, you know, I think we're just sort of at the tip of the iceberg in terms of what they knew. The NFL is definitely, you know, the players are definitely a very organized group of people. I could see that being a class, you know, potentially a class action lawsuit. I mean, I think that these lawsuits are going to be huge. I don't think that they're going to necessarily take down the NFL, but I think that paired with, you know, I think that there really could be a sort of drying up of players. I can tell you, you know, I have two children. Neither one of them will ever play football because of what I know about the sport. And, you know, I think more and more parents may end up feeling that way. I mean, you know, it's but lawsuits are definitely going to be the main actor in that.
You know, what reminds me of more than anything else is what happened with the tobacco industry. And, you know, we saw there was a point at which somewhere around half of all Americans smoked. And we found out that the tobacco industry had all kinds of evidence that smoking was really bad, and they stonewalled and denied and so forth. And now eventually, certainly, the tobacco industry is still a big business, but it's, you know, about, I think the smoking rate is like half of what it was at its peak. And I kind of expect maybe somewhat of a, I could see, I guess, sort of a similar trajectory for the NFL. You know, you kind of sort of saw the same thing with boxing. When I was a kid growing up, boxing was kind of a big thing. And now it's still a sport, and there's still a lot of money involved, certainly, but it's been marginalized a whole lot more for, well, reasons very similar to, you know, the concerns people have about the NFL.
Right. And that's an interesting, you know, topic, because you start to look at different sports and, you know, they've started to realize that these kind of issues are coming up in soccer. Obviously they're going to be coming up in rugby. They're coming just any sport that tends to have physical contact, even, you know, with soccer, they're talking about, headers, right, and sort of, you know, getting rid of the ability to, have headers in soccer because they can cause concussions. So, you know, I think it's going to be more widespread, but I think the focus is going to be on the NFL mainly because of the lack of transparency.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Okay. Well, here's our second question. Since the NFL is a private business, why do taxpayers fund stadiums? Isn't that like Walmart telling people that it will come to their town only if the people in that town pay for the building? I thought that was an interesting way to put it.
Walmart will only come to your town if you promise to subsidize their employees' wages.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's interesting. Over the last 20 years, taxpayers have spent more than $7 billion to build or renovate NFL stadiums. And overall, they've taken on not quite half of the total cost of these projects. So this is a huge thing. And of course, taxpayers are, you know, certainly don't have to do this. Now, what the proponents of these levies and other forms of taxpayer funding say is an NFL team is an engine of growth. It's not just the team, but all the businesses, the bars, the restaurants, and so forth. All of those surrounding businesses benefits. Also, it means you're a big league town in that sense. But the reality is that almost every study that's done on this that doesn't come from, say, like the NFL or some group that has, you know, clearly a stake in the outcome, finds that the economic costs don't come close to covering the cost imposed on taxpayers.
Right. I mean, you know, just because a stadium is going to bring economic opportunity to a city doesn't mean that it's not going to bring economic opportunity to the NFL at large, right? I mean, I think that they should be at least sharing in the cost of the building and the maintenance of these things. And, you know, on top of using taxpayer dollars to build them, there's the lack of property taxes that they're paying. There's, you know, the city and county governments that are paying for even things like electricity, water, sewer charges. I mean, they really have figured out ways to benefit on all levels, and at the same time, you know, with their, I mean, they're giving up their tax exempt status, but with their antitrust exceptions, they're making huge profits. I think at this point, there's sort of a, in cities, people feel very connected to their football team. They feel very, you know, like they want to sponsor it. They want new stadiums. They want new things, and they don't necessarily want to feel like they're demanding that the NFL pay for it. Right. It's sort of like a I don't know.
I guess I understand to a certain extent that it's more than just this is more than just a dollars and cents thing, and that's a reasonable way to look at it, to say there is a certain prestige, there is a certain pride that goes with, there is a certain just general quality of life, entertainment value that goes with having an NFL team in your town. And that's something that's difficult to put a price tag on. So it doesn't bother me, I guess, that, you know, you can certainly argue for non-quantifiable, non-economic benefits in quality of life. What bothers me is that taxpayers are being peddled a bogus argument about this. That's all. I mean, you know, the mendacity of it, I guess, is what bothers me, you know?
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
And I think that generally, you know, taxpayers, and myself included, I mean, you know, taxes get so, it just gets to be such a complex issue that, it gets boiled down to an issue on a ballot. Should we pay for this stadium or should we not? And you have people vote yes or no. And then, you know, but when, you know, all of the information behind it, it's like you don't have a third box. Should the NFL pay for this stadium?
Right. Yeah.
And I don't think people even realize that that's an option.
Right. Yeah, well, you know, and what a lot of owners will say is, well, you know, we can just always go elsewhere. And that reminds me of another issue, a much bigger issue, is the issue of tax exemptions for businesses. I mean, we see this competition between states all the time to lure in new businesses. They just give them more and more and more. And, you know, you mentioned a number of things, paying for various things, giving abatements and other things like that. And it becomes, in my view, kind of a race to the bottom. And the only way we stop that race to the bottom is that if all the cities, if all the states agree not to do that, which is essentially kind of an impossible thing. But, you know, I think that's the sad situation we're in, because if an NFL owner or a business owner couldn't, you know, wave in front of people the possibility of, hey, we might leave for a better offer from this other state, this other city, they wouldn't be able to play this game with us.
Yeah, although I will say, you know, we'll leave for a better city or a better offer from another city. I mean, one thing that doesn't take into consideration, and, you know, being from Cincinnati, you know, being a Bengals fan here is almost, you know, expected. So there is a potential loss of fans and, you
sure.
know,
Yeah,
there are some potential blowback issues, but, you know, I don't know if the NFL necessarily cares, because I guess they probably feel like, well, we're going to have fans somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that's it. They've done that enough times, and growing up in Cleveland and following very closely when the Browns left town, and there are a number of other cities who have those same stories, and I don't think the NFL is hugely broken up over those fans' broken hearts. Though in Cleveland's case, it's almost sad that they got a team back, because it's been nothing but misery since then. But anyway, okay, let's move on to our third question. What's wrong, really, with Washington calling its NFL team the Redskins? Isn't this just people being way too sensitive?
No, it's people being way too racist.
Okay, another way of looking at it. Yeah, all right. Because I know there are go ahead.
Look, you know, I understand, generally speaking, the justifications you hear are it's tradition, it's just a word, people are too sensitive, people are too soft-skinned, people are, you know, why should I have to give up my team name? There's a lot of white entitlement, in my opinion, that's wrapped up in it. Look, changing a team's name is really not that big of a deal. It's not that hard. And when you have a group of people who are saying, look, this is genuinely offensive, and this is something that, you know, historically, when you look at, you know, the decimation of our, you know, our people, you know, here's what this represents. It just seems like a pretty small request. In my opinion.
So would you say would you say it's a lot like the Confederate flag issue then, or
is it like the the Confederate flag issue is so complex. But yeah, I mean it in a way it is. It's like, look, you know, there is no alternative, right? Redskins is a racial slur. There is no alternative message for it. There is no positive message for it. You know, the idea of the Confederate flag is, well, it's our tradition. It's this and that. But the reality is it's tradition is based on racism and the oppression of black people and sometimes the brutal oppression of black people. And so, you know, you just have to make a decision. And generally speaking, you have white people who are going, well, I don't want to have to give this up just right. because it offends you.
Yeah, you know, I think the point you made earlier about this being wrapped up with issues of white privilege, I think a lot of people, it's difficult for them to appreciate that, you know, and we talked about this actually on the Sunday show about the minorities dealing with police, that I think a lot of times people have a hard time putting themselves into the viewpoint, into the perspective of the other, because of course, you know, to me, I can sort of see that white person kind of argument saying that, I don't know, it doesn't seem offensive to me, but then again, I think, well, what if a team had been called the Kikes or the Heebs or the Slant Eyes or something like that? And, you know, those are kind of, I think, similar kind of slurs. And all of a sudden to me, that sounds like, whoa, you know, or you know, I mean, I'm Polish. If there's a team that traditionally had been called the Dumb Polacks or something, I don't know. That would, you know, that would, I don't
yeah,
think.
Yeah, but you would still have white people going, it's been this way for so long, get over it, it's not that big of a deal. I think the bigger issue, like when you really boil it down, is, and I think that this is across the board, whether you're dealing with police brutality, the Confederate flag, I think that there are two very different definitions of racism, right? One is the hatred of a group of people based simply on their race.
Right.
And the other is a systemic form of oppression where, you know, one group is privileged and they are oppressing a group of people. And in the second definition, right, white people can't experience white racism.
Right.
And in the first definition, they can. And so white people sort of gravitate toward the first definition and don't really want to see that, you know, like when it comes to the Redskins or the Confederate flag or any of these things, that, you know, they have this privilege. They are not able to experience racism. They are you may be able to experience prejudice, but you are not going to be able to relate to this on a personal level. And you have to be okay with that. And you need to let go of the entitlement that you have around it.
Right, which can be, obviously, and we've seen, can be a very wrenching thing to do. And some people just aren't in a position where they're willing to do that.
Right. I mean, you're in academia, right? You teach political science. I'm sure that you have discussions around this every day, and I'm sure that some of them probably make you a little bit crazy.
Sometimes. Yeah, absolutely. That's the point in which I say, that's an interesting point you bring up, and let's talk about it anyway.
But, you know, the other thing is that changing the name of the Redskins would not be the first, football team who has changed their team name. I mean, it's happened in the past. It's happened for different reasons. People get over it. It's just in terms of how important it is to a group of people. I just think, why not?
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, Dan Snyder, the owner of the Redskins, does not agree with either of us on that. So sadly, as far as I'm concerned, for the foreseeable future, they will remain the Redskins. All right. Go ahead. What can you say? Dan Snyder is not exactly he's not exactly on my list of most favorite people for a number of reasons, but that's a whole nother discussion of bad NFL owners. So that does it actually for this episode of Ask the Politics Guys. Thanks for listening, and Dominique, thank you again for pinch hitting for Jay. I just mixed my sports metaphors, I guess. But anyway, and joining me, I appreciate it.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. So, and of course, as you know, if you have any questions for future episodes or just any thoughts, comments, or criticisms, we would love to hear from you. Our email is politicsguys@gmail.com. And now you can also leave a voice message for us by calling our listener line at 408-840-3518. Again, that's 408-840-3518. And we have that number on our website as well, politicsguys.com. And of course, there's our Facebook page where we post throughout the week, facebook.com/politicsguys page. We're also on Twitter @politicsguys. And if you're interested in helping to keep the show going, sharing and retweeting our new show posts and tweets and reviewing the show on iTunes or Stitcher really helps. And, of course, if you'd like to support the show financially, you can do that through the PayPal link on our website. While you're there, be sure to check out our listener rewards. We'll be back with a new show next Wednesday. We hope you'll join us.